Welcome back to the Jump Ball Podcast. I'm your host, Mo Dockeel, and today my guest is John Hamm. He's part of the OKC Dream Team Podcast, writer for the Daily Thunder and Bleacher Report. Today we got into all OKC. We talked about Melo, the ramifications of the trade, PG, Russ, Coach Donovan. We talked about it all. So let's tip it off. John, how you doing?
You know, I think I finally regained my balance because it's been a little dizzy for a few days.
Yeah, I mean, we're recording this on a Tuesday. Trade just goes down Sunday. Media day was yesterday for Oklahoma City.
Yes, it was.
And now, I mean, we're right into it. The season has begun.
It has begun. Next Tuesday, the Thunder will have their first preseason game in Tulsa, which is about a 90-minute drive from Oklahoma City, but it's a straight shot right to Tulsa. But first preseason game against the Rockets, who ended their season last year, and we're off again.
Man, I am actually happy to have basketball back. I'm giddy. I'm very excited to watch the first preseason Oklahoma City Houston game, because both of those teams are teams I really want to dive into and take a look at. But I got you on. You're my OKC expert. We got to go right into the Melo trade. For those who've been living under a rock, Melo was traded from New York on Sunday, or excuse me, on Saturday, for Enes Kanter, for who was the other guy?
Doug McDermott.
Wow, that's not nice. And then the Oklahoma City's second round 2018 pick.
Well, that was actually from Chicago, because for reasons unknown, in that Cameron Payne trade, they got Chicago to throw in their 2018 second round pick. So that one is going to New York, which it's a virtual first round pick, because it's going to be 31st or 32nd in all likelihood.
Yeah. I mean, so it's a good second round. It's a good pick.
It's a good second round pick.
So yeah, we can definitely give him credit for that. What were your initial reactions? What's your thought when you look at the Melo trade for Oklahoma City?
Yeah, you know, the one thing that someone had been telling me that, you know, Thunder ownership was kind of pushing for another big deal. And then Bill Simmons is the one who dropped that. I believe he said that Oklahoma City and Carmelo were circling each other. Then I also heard that, like, you know, the Thunder were really interested in a guy that could knock down shots, just catch and shoot opportunities. So, you know, Carmelo Anthony as a basketball player certainly seemed to check a lot of those boxes, and it sort of made sense. The stumbling block was, is he actually going to waive that no trade clause and come to Oklahoma City? Is he going to leave the largest market in the NBA and come to the third smallest? A lot of skepticism we were really skeptical that was going to happen around here, and then suddenly it does. And again, on paper, and if you kind of look at some of the stats, when Carmelo Anthony is a spot up shooter and doesn't dribble too much, he seems to fit. So you know, we'll see if all these egos are able to come together and kind of make this work this season.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the ideal situation, right? Like, is Melo being kind of the spot up shooter and not so much being the I need the ball in the mid post.
Right.
I need the post ups. I need this many touches. Because on paper, this looks like an amazing collection of talent.
Right.
You know, you're like, wow, these are three amazing players, you know, all guys capable of getting their own shot off, all guys capable of creating for themselves. Obviously, we saw Russ create for others last year. I don't know how well these guys, you know, Paul George and Carmelo, create for others. Not saying they can't, I just don't know how willing they are to do that.
Right. Well, and, you know, if you think about it, I mean, who has Paul George had to create for in Indiana? Who has Carmelo had to create for in New York? So there's understandable reason for skepticism there. And that's what I'm interested in, because, you know, all three of these guys, I mean, Paul George and Carmelo have never played with a guy like Russell Westbrook. Carmelo obviously had, Allen Iverson. He had Chauncey Billups, but not a guy like Russ. And Paul George, this goes down as the best teammate he's ever had. And, you know, here's a pair of guys that obviously Russ has had Kevin Durant, but a pair of guys like this that can, you know, score in the way they do. So it's really exciting to think about how it could come together.
Yeah, I mean, they have a lot of interesting talent. Like, this is something that's – this is going to be one of the most interesting teams. Like, they weren't already. I mean, if OKC wasn't already on your – I got to watch and see how Paul George and Russ play together, you know, they definitely are on your list now when they add Melo to that equation.
Yeah, you know, even before that trade, so, you know, the idea was Patrick Patterson would start at the four spot. And, you know, you bring in his Cantor off the bench, and the team was kind of reset back to where it was prior to Kevin Durant's departure in terms of, you know, players slotted into certain spots that had certain abilities. And it could have worked. Now, there was problems with that. I mean, Enes Kanter was a problem to play against the likes of the Houston Rockets and Golden State Warriors, and those are two of the teams that the Thunder are going to have to get past if they want to win an NBA championship. So, you know, in return, you exchange Enes Kanter, who really is a phenomenal offensive player. He really is. He gets a lot of grief for his defensive issues, but, you know, offensively, I think he was 33 points per 100 possessions and, you know, just a phenomenal rebounder, especially in the offensive end. But Melo eliminates a lot of those, I think, a lot of those concerns. I think you can play Carmelo against those teams. You don't have to worry about pulling him after 3 minutes because he's getting rocked on the court. So it was tough because Enes was, he was beloved here in Oklahoma City because he really embraced the state, kind of rallied the fans after Durant's departure, and is just an all-around good guy. And, you know, that stunk to lose a guy like that. But, you know, getting Carmelo, I think, addresses a lot of concerns this team had going up against those two teams.
Yeah, I'm curious how Steven Adams is doing with the departure of his stash brother.
Well, he was asked at Media Day. It was the very first question, and I forget how the question was posed, but – you know, it was sort of like, well, you know, Steven Enes isn't here anymore. And Steven interrupted and said, hey, he's not dead, mate. he just moved down the road. That's my horrible Steven Adams impression, by the way. But yeah,
you know, like New Zealand will come after you for that one. But go ahead.
Yes, as they should. So, yeah, I mean, like Steven was Steven, right? I've never seen the guy like upset or bent out of shape. But I think he kind of understands like this was something that was bound to happen at some point.
And my next question is, I wonder if Enes Kanter is going to convince Porzingis to grow a mustache.
Oh, he should. Well, A, is Porzingis capable of that?
Yeah, it's a good question.
he could probably put on 50 pounds of muscle easier than growing a mustache. But yeah, I mean, if he can do that, that absolutely needs to happen. Maybe he can take that up there.
Yeah. So if we can just kind of get that movement going and I rely on my friends and fans on Twitter to get that done, you know, start pushing for that Porzingis mustache and let's see what that looks like. But back to the trade, you know, that was the one thing too about the Melo trade. It didn't make OKC worse defensively or anything like that, right? You don't see a move where you look at it going like, wow, now they're even worse defensively. They got better offensively, and it probably about the same to me in that defensive level, just as you said, how Kanter can't really stay, you know, couldn't stay on the court in series where teams go small ball, whereas OKC's got to just sort of embrace small ball now, right? Like, Melo's going to be the four, don't you think?
Yeah, and Billy Donovan said as much earlier today. You know, for anyone that had any ideas, and even Carmelo was asked, it was another funny moment yesterday. He wasn't having anything with that idea of him coming off the bench. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Carmelo has started every regular season game that he's played in. If not, it's like he's had one or two appearances off the bench. So, OKC is kind of adopting that, you know, downsizing a bit. But you're right. I mean, as far as the defense goes, you know, yeah. When Steven Adams went off the floor and Kanter came in, the defensive rating just, you know, wasn't good. And when Andre Robertson left the floor, same thing. But now, you know, when you have Paul George as another wing defender, if you got Patrick Patterson coming off the bench, it's really going to help in those areas. And, you know, there's even a possibility. A guy that has been on the OKC roster now, or at least in the program for a few years, is Josh Huestis. He's a guy that when you see him play, you think, this guy looks like he could play in the NBA. Sort of an athletic wing who you know, can defend multiple positions and also, you know, provide stuff on offense without needing the basketball, there may be a chance for him as well. And so, you know, if he is able to get in there, he could provide some defense off the bench as well.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I don't know much about John Huestis. I know I've heard the name, but I don't know much about him.
Yeah, Stanford guy that, you know, he was drafted late in the first round in 2014. Part of the arrangement, he spent a year with the D League team. I'm still going to call it the D League for now, by the way.
He's staying with it. Okay.
Sticking with it for now. And yeah, it's been sort of like a slow development, you know, for him. But I mean, his NBA appearances have been in blowouts or at the end of the regular season when the other team has checked out. But 6'7" guy, really athletic. That, you know, again, I think maybe it's opened up, this trade might have opened up an opportunity for him as well.
Yeah, and that's kind of the fun stuff about trades too, is you sort of get to explore that, you know, who is coming up, who's getting more minutes now because of that. You know, the other thing with the Melo stuff that is funny, when you talked about how his reaction to somebody asking him about coming off the bench, it made me worry a little bit, not because I expect Melo to come off the bench. I think he's a starter and you got to start him.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just sort of like, no, I'm mm-hmm. still Melo. And it's not like, you're not quite Melo. You're just like Mel right now. You're on your sort of downside. Like, you should be the third option on this team. And I kind of was like, is he going to kind of be willing to take that, you know, the second and third option type of looks? Is he willing to kind of make the Chris Bosh sacrifice, really?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. That is a concern. And, you know, look, these are confident professional athletes, right? You know, they're never, I think, going to admit, you know, that maybe Father Time has taken a thing or two away from them, or, you know, that they should change in some way. But the idea is, or the thought process anyway, is that if Russell Westbrook and Paul George, who were working out with him, you know, a lot, if they were talking to him, you know, that it should be fairly well understood that Carmelo knows he's not going to come in and take over the team from the reigning MVP. Or, you know, even if he was joining a team with Paul George, that he wouldn't be coming in to take the spotlight away from him. So, again, it's a lot of things that we kind of think is going to work itself out. But, yeah, until it happens, you know, over the course of a regular season, there's reason for skepticism.
Yeah, so that's kind of my concern with Melo. But my bigger concern of Oklahoma in general is Billy Donovan.
Mm-hmm.
This actually reminds me a lot like Chris Paul coming to the Clippers and Vinny Del Negro being the coach. And I was there. Literally was there through the whole thing. And I love Vinny to death, but it didn't work out between everybody, you know. And obviously the coach is the one who pays the price in that situation. It kind of have that feel to me. Like, I'm not overly impressed with Donovan. I don't think he's that creative offensively. I don't think, you know, last year was just give the ball to Russ and everybody get out the way, you know, and things like that. So I'm very curious to see how he handles not just this situation where you have three guys and need to get the ball a lot, but three strong personalities. You know, we saw the Carmelo and D'Antoni clash, you know, a few years ago and things like that. And so I'm very curious to see how Donovan coaches this team. Like, what's your feel for that?
Yeah. And look, that is a giant question because one prominent former Oklahoma City Thunder player, you know, came out and said he didn't like playing for Billy Donovan. So now in terms of, you know, some of the things that he's done for the team, you know, he did come in very much with the idea of moving the basketball more than they did under Scott Brooks. That's debatable whether that's happened, but that also requires some buy-in from the players. And like you said, last season was sort of, you know, they kind of had to roll with what they had for a year. And so I hesitate to take too much from last season and say, you know, well, things are never going to get under control, because, I mean, that was sort of how they had to play in order to win basketball games. You know, Donovan did bring in, you know, some good stuff like out of timeouts, end of game plays, you know, that were, you know, at least better constructed than under Brooks. But sure, I understand because I think the Del Negro comparison is very interesting because, you know, look, I think Vinny Del Negro is a good NBA coach. I don't know why he hasn't got another job, you know, since the Clippers, because he did a good enough job there. And look, he did no worse than Doc Rivers has done. So, I'll tell you this, the organization, you talk to people in the organization, they feel like, because a lot of them came from San Antonio, a lot of them talk about Billy much like Pop, and not necessarily in terms of, you know, success or anything like, but just in terms of like, as a person, as a, you know, as a guy that knows basketball or kind of understands people, they think very highly of him. So, you know, I think they're going to, you know, they're going to give him every opportunity, you know, to try to work this out. It's funny because Sam Presti has on a couple of occasions already been trying to temper expectations out of the gate. Right. So, like, you know, those sorts of things are going on. But that is definitely one development to watch because, you know, if that does become a giant sticking point, I'm not entirely sure, you know, what the better in-house solution would be.
Yeah, I don't think he's getting fired this year. That kind of wasn't my intent. I just don't know if he better be up for the challenge. Like, this is not going to be an easy. This is not an easy thing to. This isn't putting KD into your offense like Golden State where he fits right in. This is going to take a lot of manipulation, a lot of creativity. You know, I know it's not just Melo's not going to be happy just as a spot up shooter in the corner.
Right.
Like, he's going to want more out of that. You know, Paul George isn't going to just be a spot up guy. You know, usage is going to go down, but, you know, his efficiency needs to come up. And how do you kind of get there with these guys? Like, that's, you know, you said it best, you know, about, you know, he's got to be able to get them to buy in on moving the ball more. You have guys whose ball tends to stick in their hand. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the real challenge in the coaching level of like, and it's not easy. Don't anybody come at me thinking like, I got the answers. I have no idea. I would just be like, oh, this is going to be interesting. I'm going to try to figure this out. So
that's where I'm at. Like, I'm making observations. In no way do I know how to address it. You know, I could just kind of point these things out. And I feel like, you know, probably what Donovan will do to help alleviate some of this is stagger the rotations in such a way that Carmelo Anthony gets to anchor the second unit and just kind of tear up opposing second units. You know, maybe something like that will help, or maybe you could do that with Paul as well. But you know, you talked about it, Russell Westbrook. If he's gonna insist on dominating the basketball, that I don't know how well that's gonna go with those other two guys. So they need to learn to share the ball a bit.
It won't work.
Yeah.
Like, it just flat out won't work. I do like the idea of staggering. I mean, that's the best thing about this deal, you know, is now you have three guys. You can have two guys on the floor at any point, you know, staggering the lineups and let them kind of create and anchor them. Or, you know, if you want to rest two guys, hey, Melo, this is your quarter. Go nuts. Mm-hmm. You know.
Right.
So, I mean, that's going to be the most interesting thing, kind of watching the substitution patterns and lineups and how he manipulates that. So I think that's going to be a really, really big thing. And like you said, like, if they don't figure this out, you know, this is going to be a 1 year rental, you know, this whole team almost in terms of, at least it's a lease with an option to buy. We can maybe refer to it that way.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great way to put it. There's still a lot of optimism and I still get all sorts of indications that Russell Westbrook will eventually sign that extension, but there's no guarantee past this season that George or Anthony remain in Oklahoma City. If they hit the Western Conference Finals or better, sure, there's a chance they come back. But yeah, I mean, this could very well be, this may not be the sort of thing where they get a couple of years to figure it out.
Yeah. I mean, no, absolutely not. You know, and my suggestion to Oklahoma City is if they really want to try to keep Paul George and keep all three of these guys, is they got to open up Uli's Gelateria in Oklahoma City. Okay.
Bring it.
You know, I'm just telling you, I hear the rumors in the NBA sphere. They know that LA has the best gelato in all the town, and it's because of Uli's Gelateria. It's obviously my favorite place. I've taken advantage of them as much as I possibly can. They're in downtown LA, which is in the Spring Arcade in between 5th and 6th Street on Spring, but they have opened a new location in the Beverly Grove area. I know it doesn't mean much to you, John, but you know, in the Beverly Grove area, 8044 West 3rd Street. I highly recommend, if you're in that area, check it out. And I'm telling you, Oklahoma City, if you want to keep these guys, if you want to keep the Thunder relevant, you got to start calling Uli's and get them to open up a shop down there.
Hey, it could happen. We recently got a Capriati's, which is very popular in Las Vegas.
Yes.
Yeah, got one of those. So now I don't have to go to Vegas as often.
Well, see, what I say, John, is why don't you kind of research some areas in Bricktown where we can get Uli to open up a gelato shop there?
I will pass the word along.
Well, moving on from my most favorite subject to my second favorite subject, which is more basketball. when you compare them, like, I still have Golden State at the very top.
Mm-hmm.
And who do you have better when it comes to Houston and Oklahoma City now with the way now that we've seen the rosters? Like, we know what these are, what these teams are.
Yeah, I've been asked this a lot over the past few days as well. So my gut reaction to this, I still wouldn't be shocked if Houston winds up winning more games than Oklahoma City in the regular season. I just think with that offense, with that D'Antoni offense, you know, they're going to pump in. They're going to put so many points on the board. They're going to play good enough defense throughout the course of the regular season that I wouldn't be surprised if they wound up as a second seed. And, you know, again, Oklahoma City, historically, if you go back and look at, you know, quote unquote, big threes that have formed, they don't always get off to the best start. You know, the Miami Heat big three took some time to click. The Cleveland big three took some time to click. Some never click at all. That's always a possibility as well. So my gut feeling is that, you know, Houston will take that second spot. But, you know, if Oklahoma City can get into that 2-3 spot by the end of the season, that's the key to get out of the Golden State side of the bracket. So, you know, if they can just stay there in the end, it comes down to, do you want home court against the Rockets or not? And if you're playing the best basketball, you know, that you can play going into the playoffs, it may not matter. So that's my general feelings on it so far.
Yeah, I still think Houston's better. Just they have a roster that meshes and is, you know, they all these guys fit together, whereas Oklahoma City still got to kind of tinker with it a lot and figure out who's doing what and roles and things like that. So I'm with you. I think Houston's the second best team in the West, but I'm with you on, I think as long as OKC's rolling by playoff time, they're a tough out come playoffs.
Right.
And I think we would be really lucky to get an OKC Houston second round matchup. Cause then I think OKC might actually be the better team at that point.
It's something that happened a couple of years ago, you know, when Oklahoma City was the 3 seed and, you know, knocked off the 67-win Spurs in round two and almost took out the 73-win Warriors in the conference finals. So, you know, historically, that's, you know, that's not surprising. But, yeah, I mean, if you look at the Rockets, I mean, they're bringing back, you know, I know they made the trade deadline deal for Lou Williams, which probably was a little bit overkill, but it wound up getting him Chris Paul, so it's probably fine. But, you know, the pieces on the team, adding P.J. Tucker and Luke Mbamute to give him some defensive versatility, and Tucker has got a reputation as a three-point shooter as well. Nene filling that role off the bench that he did so well last season. Yeah, there's a lot of reasons to be excited about what the Rockets can do. But, yeah, it's just, you know, I love Mike D'Antoni, but, again, looking at kind of trends here, D'Antoni in the playoffs, it seems like there's a limit. Whether it's players fatigue because he goes with 7-man rotations or, you know, whatever the case may be, they just seem to kind of fizzle out in the playoffs. So that's, you know, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself here, but that's kind of how I'm projecting it at this point.
Yeah, the one thing I really like about the Houston team, and if anybody's listening to my podcast, they're probably tired of me saying it, is I just like that they got a bunch of defensive wings.
Yes.
You know, they
absolutely.
In the past, they stock up on shooting. And it's like, no, no, this year we're going to stock up on defensive wings who can shoot, but, you know, maybe not great, but, you know, getting P.J. Tucker, Luke Mbamute, having Trevor Ariza, you know, Chris Paul is going to be able to give more energy defensively because he knows he doesn't have to carry as much of the load offensively as he had to in the past. I think, you know, this really kind of makes it an interesting team in that regards where, you know, they got to really they can defend and they can shoot. You know, and spread the floor and spread you out. So I think that's what makes them a really, really just I'm very interested to see how this whole thing works out as well.
And, you know, we haven't really even touched on Clint Capela or Capela. I pronounce it incorrectly, much like people pronounce Andre Roberson's name as Andre Roberson. But yeah, you know, one of the comparisons I've made here locally with Steven Adams is DeAndre Jordan. And you know, sort of that if you look at his career arc, you know, it takes a little bit, but then it, you know, he takes off by year five or six and, you know, becomes one of the premier big men in the league. Steven Adams is kind of on that trend as well. Well, and you know what? Clint Capela is probably ahead of both of those guys at the age of 22. So, I mean, he's a huge component to that team that I expect is going to be even better coming into this season. So, and yeah, and then I'm sure Chris Paul will probably find him for a lob or two throughout the course of the season as well.
Yeah, I mean, like I mean, we saw what Chris Paul did for DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah,
you know, I think we're going to see the same kind of thing from Capela. Like Capela had to have been just drooling when he heard Chris was coming. He had to just been right. Like, oh, so many. It's not like he wasn't getting lobs to begin with, but he's like, oh, so many more lobs are coming my way.
Yes,
yeah. You know, so I think that's a good acquisition. You brought up Steven Adams. We haven't really talked about him much, and I'm going to kind of veer off a little bit, but what are your expectations out of Adams this year?
Yeah, I think last season, Adams actually did make some improvements offensively in terms of, you know, he was able to, you know, he did develop a bit of an offensive game that he didn't get to display a whole lot. And so many of the plays, you know, such as like lob plays or just, you know, dish off passes, it was difficult. A, he had this hand injury that seemed to linger throughout the season. And then two, Oklahoma City's lack of space, you know, defenders just packed the paint. So there was absolutely no room for him to work with. The space issue has been fixed. So I think we're going to see more of that Steven Adams that people were really excited about coming out of the 2016 playoffs. The defensive big that, you know, can pick and roll and lob and, you know, and create some havoc from that aspect. And he's going to make life, you know, a lot easier for other guys, just setting screens and doing all that sort of work. So, I think he sounds pretty excited it should open up a little bit for him this season.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, everybody was expecting him to make that leap last year. And like you said, the spacing issues became a problem.
Yeah,
you know, I wasn't impressed with him defensively, and maybe that's more the hand injury from last season, but I just kind of was like, I expected him better defensively last year. And to me, it's like the spacing doesn't matter at that point, but maybe it's more along the lines of not getting touches offensively, not as engaged. You never know with how guys react to that. But let's ask the real important question. Next media day. Are all three of these guys going to be here? Two of them, one of them, none of them? Are you guys going to open Uli's Gelateria in OKC? Like, what's happening? What's your thoughts for the next year's media? Like, obviously, it's not fair. We got to see how that plays out. But what do you think?
Yeah, you know, you're right. This is a question I've gotten a lot since Saturday,
and it's not fair. It's not a fair question. So naturally, I asked it.
But, I mean, there are some things to keep in mind when, you know, obviously there's the play on the court, which is still, you know, a giant question mark. We don't know. However, off the court, Oklahoma City, if they brought back all of those guys at what we assume would be market value, they are facing an enormous tax bill to bring that team back next season. Now, it's a bit of a misnomer. It's misunderstood about Oklahoma City's willingness to pay the tax. All along, the whole thing was pushing off that repeater tax as long as possible. So at this current rate, they would trip the repeater tax next season. So as it stands right now, if the season ended today, I think they would pay around $30 million in luxury tax. Not a big problem. They've been preparing for that. But to bring that team back the following season, you could be looking at $130, $140 million in luxury taxes. I think even the huge market, Knicks, Lakers, Warriors, those teams would even have to pause a little bit on that. So if you're looking for something that might throw a monkey wrench into this giant plan, maybe it's that. Maybe Sam Presti and crew are aware of this and they have some ideas in place to kind of work with that. Maybe it's not that big of a deal. Maybe the ownership knows that they need to do this while Russell Westbrook is this age and roll it forward. So, again, just another factor to keep in mind, but certainly how they perform on the court is going to go a long way towards determining, you know, how many, if any, are back next year.
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned that you've heard, and I get the feeling you think that Russ is going to sign the extension this October. To me, I actually don't think he signs it till next summer. I know he's taking a risk with injury, but he's got that Jordan money coming his way. I think he kind of loses that possible leverage or that possible out should he, you know, should Paul leave, should Carmelo opt out and take off as well. Then he's kind of stuck again almost with last year's team.
Yeah.
So I kind of think for him, the smartest move, I think, would be bet on yourself. That contract's still going to be there, you know, next summer. You know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him kind of sort of the LeBron model of just take control of what you can.
Yeah, and look, if you're one of the 1-2% in the NBA these days, it's not a bad option.
Yeah.
To take short deals, and like you say, it gives you the flexibility to, you know, if your situation changes where you're at, you can get out and go somewhere else. If you do get injured, you're one of the 1-2% players in the league, top 1-2%. You're probably going to get maxed out the next summer anyway, unless you have something amputated.
So, and with Russ, Russ on one leg might be better than at least 60-70% of the league.
Definitely preferable to Samaj Kristen. We went through that last season, and
you're just bringing up old pain for you. That's all. That's fine.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean that's just how the league is. I mean, these guys are in such demand; they have such power that they can wield, and you know, so putting pressure on teams is something they can do. Now, on the other hand, with Russ, you know, one of the things that I heard last year when he signed that renegotiation and extension with Oklahoma City. Yes, he got more money as part of the deal, but you know, I was talking with Darnell Mayberry from the Oklahoman who covered the team for a number of years, and he mentioned talking to someone from Westbrook's side that said this wasn't about money. In other words, this was a show of loyalty. You know, this was a show that I'm committed to Oklahoma City. So, long story short, even if Russ doesn't take the extension, he may very well have a commitment to the Thunder that people don't really, you know, quite grasp. So that doesn't necessarily mean he's out the door. Even if he is, you know, if the team falls apart and he's kind of back to where he was last season, you know, he may have a strong enough connection with management and with ownership that maybe he's just going to, you know, sit through it.
And then what's your feel on Melo? You think Melo's going to opt out? Personally, I look at it going like, if he opts out, he's leaving money on the table. Nobody's giving him that $28 million deal next year.
Right. Yeah. The counterpoint is, you know, like I mentioned, you know, Oklahoma City facing a large tax bill. One way around that could be to go to Carmelo and say, hey, opt out of your contract. We'll give you a long-term deal. You know, we'll give you, I think he's 33 years old. I think he would fall under the new under 38 rule.
Yeah.
You know, they could say, we'll give you a 4-year deal for, I don't know, $70 million. So that way you give up a little bit of money that you were expecting, but you're going to get more money on the back end than you probably would have got. That's the only way that I see it, because you're right. There's not going to be a market for him at $27 million next season. There's not going to be many teams with cap room to begin with. And then at his age, he's just not likely to recoup that. So the only way that I see him opting out is if he gets a long-term deal in exchange.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very Spursian way of going about it.
I call it the Richard Jefferson, because he was the first one they did it with. They've done it with Pau Gasol, you know, just this past summer. But, you know, again, the people that run Oklahoma City, they came through the San Antonio organization.
Yeah, so I definitely can see that. Good stuff there. Let's, before we go, let's talk about the one bit of news that happened today was, you know, it sounds like Wade's all but a Cav now. You know, what are your thoughts of Dwayne Wade joining LeBron and the Cavs, and, you know, what's your expectations?
Yeah, you know, yesterday, both Paul George and Carmelo Anthony were asked about Dwayne Wade, and they were enthusiastic about trying to recruit him to Oklahoma City. And a lot of us, after the fact, were kind of like, well, I don't really know about that idea. nothing against Dwayne Wade. It's just, you know, if the feeling was in Oklahoma City, there was enough guys now that could create shots. You need those kind of role player type guys. You need Alex Abrines on the floor for 20 some odd minutes launching threes, and that Wade would take away from that. So finding a role for him in Oklahoma City seemed awfully tough, and it felt like that Cleveland made more sense. And so that, you know, it looks like that's what's going to happen. And certainly, I mean, over the course of an 82-game season, they're going to be without Isaiah Thomas for at least a few months. This gives them another guy with Derrick Rose that, you know, they can make the backcourt work. I would assume that Dwayne Wade would start. J.R. Smith would go back to a bench role that he had for a lot of his career. I think it's a move that makes sense, you know, and it's Cleveland kind of adding what they can. You know, everyone is just trying to body up in anticipation of Golden State, basically. So, yeah. You know, for them, I guess it makes sense. And I think it makes more sense there than it would have in Oklahoma City.
The one thing I would say, and you're right, I think he does fit better in Cleveland than Oklahoma City, just because also you don't want to take Andre Robertson out of the starting lineup. I don't think Wade's coming to be your sixth man, although that would be kind of awesome. But you want that defense, you know, especially with OKC's lineup. You want to get – you're going to have Melo and Russ, and they're not going to defend all that much. So, you know, right. PG and Robertson and Adams, it's going to fall on them in the starting lineup. The thing for me with the Cavs is you added another guy that shrinks the floor and doesn't space the floor. Yeah. And, you know, you have that with Derrick Rose, and now you have that with Wade, who – listen, the one thing about Wade is he's a great cutter. He knows how to play with LeBron, so there's definitely some, you know, knowledge there that they have together, and I think that's kind of a very interesting thing there. I find it really interesting. I don't think it moves the needle one way or the other, and to be honest, I didn't think Wade going anywhere would have moved the needle.
And that is so strange to talk about with Dwayne Wade, right? But, you know, like you said, he can't shoot threes. And he's a guy that, you know, he needed, 16 shots a game last season to average 18 points. So, you know, not the most efficient of guys. I understand that Chicago was a mess last year and probably didn't motivate him a whole lot, you know, on either end of the court. But still, his best days are behind him. But, you know, I guess they're putting hope that, you know, LeBron finds some way to really make him effective on the court.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be the – really interesting thing. That's going to be a challenge for Ty Lue and how he's going to handle that. I know I said that was going to be the last thing I brought up. I wanted to bring up one thing that I felt like we kind of missed on talking about OKC. Mm-hmm. We got to give Sam Presti credit. Now, I've not been a Sam Presti fan since the James Harden trade. So I got to give him credit. He basically turned chicken shit into a chicken salad.
Right.
and it's amazing. And I got to give him absolute credit in that regards. And it's not just that. I was very high on the offseason. Raymond Felton, mm-hmm. Patrick Patterson. You know, these are guys that were going to come in and help right away. You know, you don't have to worry about Samaje Christian anymore being the backup point guard. You have a competent guy in Raymond Felton. He ain't going to come in there and drop 20 or anything like that. But he's going to be able to run the offense and give Russ a break in terms of ball handling and just to let him sit on the bench for an extra few minutes and you don't feel like you're going to cough up a lead.
Right.
So I just want to give Sam Presti a lot of credit considering how much I've not given him credit in the past. So
yeah, you know, it's complicated because believe me, here locally, you know, there are some people that are they're quite down on Sam Presti, and I'm usually the one trying to come on and, you know, trying to explain a lot of the logic, you know, to the madness there. You know, you mentioned the Harden trade. It's one of the more misunderstood deals. You know, that one, I don't think Sam Presti wanted to move James Harden. It was somewhat of a management or somewhat of an ownership decision. I kind of understand their standpoint in terms of, again, I mentioned that repeater tax earlier. You know, they wanted to wait as long as they could to trip that repeater tax. Ultimately, they were willing at the very end to go into, you know, make a commitment to the tax to re-sign James Harden. Harden didn't agree to it. It just didn't work out between the two. There's been some other moves along the way as well. You can kind of scratch your head about with them, but a lot of that was driven on trying to stay under the luxury tax for a few years and then ramp up spending to around this time. So, you know, now he's back and he's got an open checkbook, it seems. And the way he was able to, you know, go to Indiana and sort of leverage that situation when everyone thought, what's the point of trading for him? He's just going to go to the Lakers. And Sam Presti said, I'm willing to take a chance. You make that move, and then Carmelo Anthony doesn't, you know, he doesn't open up his no trade clause to Oklahoma City without that trade. So again, when that situation where, you know, he wanted to go to Houston, but the Rockets didn't have the pieces to make it work and got down to Melo having to go to training camp with the Knicks. And finally he says, fine, I'll go to Oklahoma City, you know, and they were there to pounce on it. So, a marvelous job. And, you know, I hate these Executive of the Year awards because I feel like team building is a multi-year thing.
Yes.
But Sam Presti is going to be one of the guys they're going to be talking about for Executive of the Year this time, in the offseason.
He definitely won. I mean, the Thunder are one of the teams that won the offseason.
Right, which they never do.
Yeah. And my thing about the Harden trade was just that he was a restricted free agent. Mm-hmm. Like, it just felt like a move you didn't have to make at the time.
Right.
And this is when I was with the Clippers, and when that trade happened, I got a call from one of our guys in the backcourt. I'm not going to name names, but and we both were just like, dude, we can win we're definitely going to be better than them. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if we finished that way, but we were definitely, you know, we looked at it as like, we were shocked they did it.
Yep.
We were like, what are you guys? You just went to the finals, and the whole thing, it was just, we just kind of kept coming back to, he was a restricted free agent.
Yep.
You could have waited till the deadline to see how things worked out and stuff. Obviously, there's a lot more that goes into it. The repeater tax, which you brought up, you know, many times stuff. So that was always something, you know, and I'm sure Presti's hand might have been forced with management in that regards.
Yep.
But yeah, they've done
well. And it seems like every time I go on a podcast, I'm talking the Harden trade. I mean, this never fails.
Tired of it.
But you know, I have inside outside the organization, and I understand there's two sides to every story, and the truth is in the middle. You know, I understand that. There was a lot of concern about James Harden and wanting more of the spotlight and kind of wanting the sort of spotlight he was going to get in Houston. So, you know, and the Rockets, I mean, obviously Oklahoma City shopped him other places that summer and those teams didn't bite. Houston was pretty desperate to get a hold of him. And I think there was an immediate concern about with that young team, you know, could that cause some poisonous stuff in the locker room? I know that was one thing. That's not to say that he's a bad apple. Just there was a lot of chemistry concerns. You know, then there was the restricted free agency angle, but there's also stories like with Eric Gordon in New Orleans, you know, when he signed an offer sheet with Phoenix and he was not happy when the Hornets at the time matched the offer sheet. So like I say, there were some other things taken into consideration, and it's just those things I throw out there because people often kind of blame it as solely a luxury tax decision. And that's part of the equation, but not even the largest chunk of the decision.
Right. So, I mean, that it all makes sense in that regard. John, I'm out of questions.
Okay.
I've taken up a bunch of your time. Why don't you tell everybody where to find you? Tell them about the great Dream Team podcast. I know you guys have put together quite a squad.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can find my work. I do writing for Bleacher Report as a lead Oklahoma City Thunder writer. I contribute to DailyThunder.com. I cover the Thunder here locally for 107.7 The Franchise in Oklahoma City. And then, yeah, so the Dream Team podcast, it is me, it is Fred Katz, who's a beat writer for the Norman Transcript, Andrew Schlecht, who's one of the podcasters with another podcast called Down to Dunk. We also get special contributions from Royce Young of ESPN. And this is a podcast that we all got together, and there was, you know, an interest and demand in this sort of thing. So we started, we just launched it on Patreon, $4 a month. We drop a new podcast every week. We're probably gonna have to ramp up our content here soon, because we've had a lot more demand than I thought we were going to have off the bat.
Good problem.
Yeah, it's a nice problem to have, definitely. But we love doing this stuff. The four of us get together and talk about this stuff all the time. Let's get it on a podcast. People are willing to pay for content. That's the one thing that I'm finding, is that if you put out quality content, there's a market out there for it. So, you know, that's encouraging. And so that's something we're very happy about.
Awesome. Well, I highly recommend go check out the OKC Dream Team podcast. Check out John's stuff on Bleacher Report at Daily Thunder. If you're in OKC, please listen to him on the radio. I can't recommend him enough. He's my Thunder guy. I like going to John when I need something, man. Thank you so much, John, for coming on.
Thanks for having me, as always, man.
And that's it for today. Be sure to rate us, like us, leave reviews on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Check out our amazing content on thejumpball.net, as well as the Jump Ball University. Have yourselves a great one.